There will be spoilers ahead. Lots of spoilers, so be careful, won't you?
Welcome to another episode in our series, 'Cause It's Good For You, movies chosen exclusively from the Criterion Collection. This week's film is from Disney Pixar, and it's 2008's WALL-E. Oh boy, this film is a wacky sci-fi spoof where the Earth is, get this, so polluted and overwhelmed with garbage created by rampant consumerism and greed that humanity decides to ignore the problem and go into space to just hang out on a bunch of space princess cruise ships. Can you imagine? Oh, and this is the weirdest part. Humans all become lethargic, bloated bags of nothing who don't even walk under their own power. Can you picture? And all they do is consume stuff and play games in virtual reality, and they never look up from their data screens. Where do these guys come up with this kind of fantasy? Man, this is so hard to take seriously. Oh, and the best part? People just hand all their lives over to AI systems to take care of everything for them. So wacky. Man, I am so glad that none of this is even remotely believable now. But anyway, I'm your host, Max Hello Dolly Levine. And over there is your host, Mike. Why are you calling me Dolly Luce? What's your directive, Mike?
Pixar, it's for kids!
But before we get to Pixar doing things to children, wow, that came out badly.
Did it?
yes, we did. We have to get to our poll question. But first, we must right a great wrong by the fact that last week I neglected to include a missive from our favorite correspondent from the Emerald Isle itself, Mr. Bill O'Lading. Bill O'Lading. And so I do want to include that back when we were asking, what's your favorite film about journalism? Our fine Irish laddie said, The Great Muppet Caper. Just kidding.
Oh.
Isn't it weird that Kermit and Fozzie are supposed to be ace reporters, but never actually file any of their stories during their London adventure?
No.
It does now. For a serious answer, gotta go with Network, 1976. Mm. The amoral and despicable quest for ratings by a news program up to and including murder performed on screen.
Murder.
It's a masterful work and uncomfortably predicts our current world. A lesser known work, but still a good one, is Whiskey Tango Foxtrot. Oh yeah, Tina Fey. She plays a rookie war correspondent in Afghanistan. The film explores the risks, rewards, and absurdities of working in a war zone as a journalist. I felt it was excellent and hope others will give it a chance. Yeah, Martin Freeman's in that too.
Huh.
Finally, Civil War, from just 2 years ago, deserves a nod. In the not-too-distant future, well, okay, it's not exactly what he wrote, America has fallen into civil war. The cause and specific parties are left ambiguous. A small group of journalists and war photographers in New York are on a mission to interview the president, currently in his third term, at the White House Fortress. They experience an Odyssey-esque journey through a series of vignettes of America at war with itself. It gets pretty grim. I enjoyed it greatly. Bill, is everything okay?
Maybe he should take a Werner Herzog film or two.
Something mellow, something to cheer up with. Yeah. But thank you, Bill. I'm sorry we missed you. I didn't include you last week, but we've also got an answer from you coming up later. But now we have our this week's
poll question.
This week we want to know, who is your favorite non-US or damn foreign actor and why? From the foreign and probably fictional land of Canada, we have Vince.
Probably.
I've been there. I'm sure you think you have. Vince says, I love me some Michelle Yeoh like no one's business. Mm. Well, who the hell doesn't? Mm. And have for decades, and the same could be said for Gary Oldman, who just doesn't give a bad performance. That is true.
That is absolutely true. And he seems like a nice guy, like a really nice guy.
I am guessing you mean foreign actors in U.S. movies, since many of the actors here are not in U.S. movies, but are fantastic nonetheless. And I'm sure they all really exist, Vince.
Stop.
Canadian actors, please.
You mean like Ryan Reynolds?
He doesn't count. He's not real. They built him out of a kit.
In Canada.
Dave says, okay. Helen Mirren, that was me, not him, has had some good roles recently, and she consistently does a fabulous job. This is true. Mm. Enjoyed Mobland, for example, and 1923. I don't know those.
Me
now that we're old, have to enjoy the old people performances. Get off my lawn, as they say.
Indeed.
You have never said that in your life, Dave, not even to your dogs.
He doesn't have one.
He has dogs.
No lawn.
He might have a lawn. You don't know that.
So. In he lives Japanese in San Francisco. Cinema, he does not have a lawn.
Oh, that's probably true. In Japanese cinema, Nakadai is a favorite. Nakadai rules. So charismatic and just brings a calm intensity to all his roles. Harakiri, Goyujin, and Hatashiya all come to mind. In German cinema, I suppose, Daniel Brühl. Goodbye Lenin was great. Yeah. Daniel Brühl. He's that guy who was in that thing.
Did we do Goodbye Lenin?
No, that you're thinking of the other one about the comedy about the Russian Revolution.
Yeah, comedy.
Comedy, yeah.
It sure was funny, all those people being assassinated.
It was wacky.
See our episode on that movie whose title we can't remember.
Yeah. Charles Forsythe says, Tony Leung.
Oh, yeah.
I'm probably pronouncing wrong. He hasn't done a ton in Western cinema, but he is an icon in Hong Kong.
Yeah.
I see what you did there. Byron Ho says, Arnold Schwarzenegger.
Oh.
Okay, there's a surprise. Films like T2 and Kindergarten Cop were peak 90s. His accent is so iconic, too, not to mention his entrance into meme culture.
Yeah.
But remember, it's not a tumor.
And also remember, his first line of dialogue in any of his big movies was, in fact,
chills. I still get chills.
It's the Tyler accent.
Tyler Stewart first asked, do Brits or Canadians count as foreign? Of course they do. They're not American.
No.
They are so tightly integrated into the American movie and theater industry that I'd hesitate to call them that.
They would.
That's a fair point, but yeah, I wouldn't say that to them. Then Ian McKellen and Helen Mirren are tied for first, with Guy Pearce following closely.
Yeah.
And Guy is only behind because he hasn't developed the body of work that Ian and Helen have accomplished in their lifetimes. Well, no one has.
Yeah, that's because they keep doing all the movies and won't get out of the way.
Yeah.
Especially Judy Dench.
They keep
Dench.
Doing them well, which is really annoying. Kelly Cooper says, another vote for Michelle Yeoh.
Mm.
Always and forever. While I've loved a lot of her performances, I think Wing Chun is still my favorite. You know, everybody Wing Chun tonight. Everybody.
Wang Chun.
Have fun tonight. No, it's Wing Chun.
Fired. Dear God, still didn't know Canada is real.
I still have no proof. And once again, a second from our boy in Ireland, Bill O'Lading, quote, when I not completely aware of my duty to my family and my country, I would not have come back tonight, or indeed ever again. That, of course, as you can tell by my flawless impression, is Audrey Hepburn.
Ah, forever I just thought you were today. In pain because I knew we were.
She has an amazing filmography. No one can claim she had enormous range.
So what?
That is true. But she was always equal parts joyous and tragic in her role. Hepburn's American debut in Roman Holiday catapulted her to stardom and a Best Actress Oscar win. And there she stayed deservedly forevermore. Mm. I love Roman Holiday. Soulmates meet, share enough love in one day to last a lifetime, and then they must part. Duty wins out, but it doesn't hurt any less. Hepburn and Gregory Peck are wonderful together. Yes, they are. They both start out as such serious, world-weary characters, but their chance meeting brings out the youth, silliness, and joy in the other. It's heart-wrenching to watch them part ways. They know it cannot work, but it doesn't hurt any less. It's the parting at the end of the film that makes the film work. I could watch it over and over and over. Indeed, I think I will.
Hmm.
As you should, as we all should.
Why,
thank you again, and Mr. O'Lading. And, ooh-hoo, we have from our exotic and foreign voicemail.
Foreign?
Yes.
She's not foreign.
That exotic and foreign little bit of fluff, Doris Hempelmeyer.
Hello, Max Michael. Hi, Max. This is Doris Hempelmeyer here to answer your poll question. I gotta go with another guy that I've mentioned many times before, and maybe he's my fifth element. I don't know. But anyway, I'm going with David Tennant. And is there anything he can't do? He's funny. He's serious. The Shakespeare out of the sky. Oh, my goodness. Everything is wonderful that he does. I love it all. So that's my answer. I hope you guys have a wonderful week. And I'll see you later, Max. Bye.
David Tennant. Okay, that is a perfectly reasonable one.
Sure.
He still, I think, has played the absolute best Marvel villain ever as Kilgrave the Purple Man in the Jessica Jones series.
Whew. Yeah, that's a frightening character. Yeah,
but he's also very relatable and very human. But what about you, Mike? Who's your favorite filthy foreign actor?
Wow, just horrible. Sadly, Vince took mine. Michelle Yeoh and Gary Oldman. Yeah. I will watch Gary Oldman read his phone book because I never know what he's going to do. I will say Emily Blunt is kind of following in the same footsteps because I've seen her in a bunch of things and her range is really good and she disappears into roles. Yeah. And I really like her, but Michelle Yeoh, dear gods, even in that dreadful 80s police film she's in, and I can't remember which Hong Kong film it is, and she's...
Cynthia Rothrock, yes.
Very 80s in it, but she's amazing, just amazing. She's made a great transition to doing a lot of stuff over here. Her Hong Kong films are great. Really enjoy her. Just more Michelle Yeoh would be fine. And same with Gary Oldman. So those two are mine, but what about yours? Who's your favorite foreign actor?
Well, I do agree with the Michelle Yeoh, but I also got to go with Ian McKellen and Jackie Chan. Yeah. I mean, Ian McKellen can do anything and has.
Jackie Chan is an actor, though.
Once he starts moving, once he's doing stuff.
Once he stops really talking is what you mean.
No, even when he's talking, he has really good comic timing. Maybe not so much with the language, but his face, his body language, he's hilarious, and he's really good at it.
And talk about limited range, though. He is good at playing.
We're never going to see him do Shakespeare or no plays or anything. He's Jackie Chan, but he's a lot of fun, and I just admire so much how he very literally throws himself completely into any oncoming part that he's playing.
And out of.
He is so much fun.
Well, cool. But
those were all great. Thank you very much. These are terrific answers.
Yes.
I got a new question for you. Inspired by this week, who is your favorite Pixar or Disney Pixar protagonist? Who's your favorite main character in a Pixar movie? And we will reveal our wacky high-tech ways to answer at the end of the show. But first, we have to answer this burning hemorrhoid question. Mike?
Seen anything good?
Well, me. Have you?
Yeah, actually, I started watching a series on HBO Max. Thank you, Weasel. And it is a series that I was not specifically looking for, but I heard a lot of good talk about it. And it is called Lanterns. And before you ask, it does not have anything to do with Illumination. No. Whoa. It is about the Green Lanterns, who are DC superhero comics.
And in Brightest Day and Blackest Night, those guys?
That's the one. And as is often the case with some of the more maybe space opera-y characters in the superhero universe, adapting them to a screen of any kind, especially a smaller screen, can be an interesting chore. Well, they decided to make it kind of a police procedural to start, which I'm actually really enjoying. I have to say that the people making this don't seem to like Hal Jordan much because Hal Jordan is potentially the biggest prick in the galaxy.
Yeah, kind of a galactic level douchebag.
The biggest problem with the character is not that he's a prick, but he tends to be right. And that's what that combination. But he's also captivating. And the guy playing John Stewart, and admittedly, I didn't look up names for any of the actors. I like John Stewart, not the talk show host. That happens.
He would have been awesome as a Green Lantern.
Yes, but not that one because that one's black, and I'm glad that they did not change race. Yeah. The guy playing John Stewart is really, really good. And while there is a minimum of Green Lantern-ness in it, it still feels like, what would a superhero be like in our actual society? And there's only been two episodes so far. They're doing it once a week, and it's on HBO Max. So you have to stream it. But so far, the first two episodes, I think, have been really interesting and good. But what about you, Max? Have you seen anything good lately?
I also saw Lanterns, and I'm intrigued. I also watched, over the weekend, I saw The Devil Wears Prada 2, the sequel to the very successful 2006 movie.
Gay. Now, how did you like it? Gay.
Well, I thought it was fabulous. God,
Max is not gay.
Why did I do that?
How was it? Because oh dear.
Okay. Let me say the cast is still wonderful. Okay. You know, we have the big, the original major characters. You know, we've got Miranda Priestly with Meryl Streep. We've got Anne Hathaway as Andy. We've got Emily Blunt as Emily, and Stanley Tucci as Nigel.
Okay.
And they're all terrific, if somewhat toned down a bit.
Oh.
Honestly, it's nice. It's okay, but it feels colossally unnecessary.
Yeah, I worried about
that. A lot of it is the same story. Also, my big problem, Anne Hathaway, I love Anne Hathaway. She is absolutely wonderful. She's done a lot. She has such range. The thing is, she's supposed to be playing Andy after 20 years.
She doesn't look any different, does she?
Well, no, that's just generally unfair.
I just knew it.
No, the main thing is she's been supposedly a hard-bitten journalist for 20 years, and she is still exactly as naive and wearing her heart on her sleeve and every emotion shows on her face as she was. I don't believe she's been a journalist for 20 years in this movie.
Doesn't feel journalist-y, huh?
Not terribly.
So this wouldn't be your choice for best journalism movie, huh?
No, it would not. I really like the original. This is okay. It's, you know, if you see it on streaming, it doesn't cost anything. It's a nice distraction, but I feel it was unnecessary.
Okay.
Again, cast, wonderful, story, meh.
Mm. All right. Well, we should move on from there to something else, a section that we like to call...
The Facts. First, a little something about the Criterion Collection itself, just very brief. This is a private company that was self-owned all up until about 2 years ago, when a fellow named Stephen Rail bought the Criterion Collection and Janus Films. This is for a company called Indian Paintbrush, which, if it sounds at all familiar, that's because they are the guys who have done who have produced and distributed every single Wes Anderson movie in the universe.
Oh, how twee.
Yeah, very twee. But it sounds like it's in decent hands, at least.
Yeah, that's cool.
And we'll come up with, I'm sure, many dark scandals and terrible dark goings on at Criterion that we will no doubt have to make up. But let's talk. Yeah, I really doubt there's a whole lot there. But now, budget, $180 million.
Yeah, Pixar ain't cheap.
They don't do cheap movies. How much did it make? $532 million, over half a billion dollars.
Somehow we have not yet seen a WALL-E 2.
Give it time. Everything that seems to be coming out of Disney for next year is all sequels. Incredibles 3, Coco 2.
Not going to see it. not going to see it.
This is the first Pixar film to be nominated for 6 Academy Awards. Ooh. This ties it with the only other animated films to garner this many nominations. Can you guess which one that was? I bet you can.
Is it a Disney film?
Disney film.
Snow White.
Nope. It's a tale as old as time.
Oh, Beauty and the Beast.
Yep.
Well, Bill O'Lading will be happy. It's one of his favorite films.
Yeah.
That's right, because the Oscars they gave for Snow White were honorary ones.
Exactly. Yeah, this was the only one that it won was Best Animated Feature. That was WALL-E. Mm. Elissa Knight, who provides the voice of Eve, isn't an actress. She's just a random employee at Pixar. They liked her voice.
Oh, well, we'll get to another one of those if you don't.
WALL-E, as I'm sure you were all dying to know, stands for Waste Allocation Load Lifter Earth Class.
Okay.
EVE stands for Extraterrestrial Vegetation Evaluator, which actually one of them, I think the Otto says that very briefly. The name WALL-E, though, is kind of a tip of the hat to Walter Disney, a.k.a. Walter Elias Disney.
Who?
Yeah, he's some filmmaker, supposed to be good for you.
Yes, yes, yeah.
To explore the possibilities of pure visual storytelling, Andrew Stanton, the director, and the Pixar team watched every single Charlie Chaplin and Buster Keaton movie, both the short films and the features, every day during lunch for a year and a half.
Huh.
The average number of storyboards used on a Pixar film is 75,000. For this movie, yikes, it was 125,000.
Yikes.
Most of the robots are voiced by Ben Burtt through mechanical sounds of his creation. He recorded 2,500 different sounds, twice the average of a Star Wars movie, and also the most Burtt had ever recorded for one feature film. He had just completed before this Star Wars Episode III, Revenge of the Audience, and had told his wife that he never wanted to work on another film that involved robots.
Uh-oh.
His involvement with the film lasted 2 years. When Andrew Stanton met him, he just said, I need you to be 80% of my cast. You know, he talked him through the idea for the film, and he changed his mind.
Well, he actually got to speak. That probably had part of it.
Yeah. There is a lot, and I mean a lot, of Easter eggs and little private jokes in this, as there are in most Pixar movies. Otto's secret directive A113 is an ongoing joke in animation. Room A113 was a classroom at Cal Arts where a lot of the Disney and Pixar animators learned their craft. A113 shows up in all of Pixar's animated films and a lot of Disney ones. WALL-E's eyes were inspired by a pair of binoculars that was given to Andrew Stanton when he was watching an Oakland A's game versus the Red Sox. Stanton missed the entire first inning because he was so distracted by the binoculars.
You can look through them, you know.
And they make things bigger.
Yeah, like baseball.
The sound of insect clicks was made by locking handcuffs. The cockroach chirps are sped up raccoon sounds. The wind sounds were a bag dragged across a carpet, and the sound of Eve's laser blasts are partially created by tapping a slinky spring.
Oh, yeah.
WALL-E's pet cockroach, by the way, is nicknamed Hal by the artists in reference to the silent film producer Hal Roach. Get it? And Hal 9000 from 2001 Space Odyssey. There are other little references to that movie in this movie.
There are
a ton of references to Apple computers. I'm sorry.
What?
In this movie.
No. I didn't notice that.
Yeah, when WALL-E is fully charged, he makes the same boot-up noise that most Apple Macintosh computers have made since 1996.
Which you cannot turn off.
Yes, no matter how hard you try.
Nope.
WALL-E watches his favorite movie every night on the screen of an iPod. Yep. The villainous autopilot's voice is provided. It's not an actor. It's Apple's text-to-speech system, Macintalk.
Well, they're cheaper that way.
Eve's sleek design as an evolution of WALL-E's parallels the IMAX design having evolved from the boxy beige Apple IIe.
Oh, okay. I thought it kind of looked like the Android symbol, but okay.
Eve was co-designed by Apple's senior vice president of industrial design, Jonathan Ive, the man responsible for the design of Apple devices.
That makes a lot of sense, actually.
According to some stuff on the DVD special features, originally, the inhabitants of the Axiom, by the way, the name Axiom means something that is always true or never to be questioned.
Uh-huh.
The original inhabitants were going to be aliens, led by a royal family with a penchant for mistreating robots. Andrew Stanton eventually scrapped the alien idea. One of the early concepts for the evolution of humans in space for 700 plus years was that they would become gelatinous, boneless, legless, see-through green creatures that would resemble Jell-O.
So they kept most of that.
Yeah, the design of the Axiom's passengers changed from blobs to more solid gray blobs to the final big baby concept.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's not entirely untrue.
Speaking of Pixar Easter eggs, one of the items in the junkyards is Red from Red's Dream, 1987. Another is a bottle labeled Leak Less, The brand, the number 52 race car from Cars, was sponsored by. Colette's scooter from Ratatouille is there. And among Wally's trinkets is a Rex and Ham piggy bank from Toy Story and a doll based on Mike from Monsters, Inc. Aren't you glad you knew this?
I didn't even notice them.
In the widescreen format, when Wally replaces one of his eyes accidentally damaged by Eve, it's revealed on the right that Wally gets the electricity to his home from a big stack of yellow, by and large, car batteries he's amassed. The logo on Eve's chest that appears after she obtains the plant is the same logo used by Disney's Epcot's The Land Pavilion up until 2005. Within the first 5 minutes, there's a monologue via holographic billboards. There's no dialogue at all for 22 minutes in this movie, and the first dialogue with humans doesn't start until 39 minutes in.
I wonder if that's also a tribute to 2001 A Space Odyssey, because it's pretty much the same. It's like 40 minutes before we get anybody talking.
Yep. And, you know, Otto is based on Hal, has a bright red central eye, and a similar storyline, a directive it can't override.
Yeah, we'll come back to that.
Yeah, according to Andrew Stanton's directory commentary, when you see the pictures of the captains of the Axiom, what we see is a term of service, not necessarily lifespan, because there's no overlap of years. The average term of service is 135 years. These years add up to 666.
Wapner,
Within the portraits, Otto develops from a small light and becomes brighter with each succeeding captain, as the obesity of the captains grows at the same time, showing the over-reliance on the autopilot. There is literally a metric ton more of stuff, but I think that's enough for
now. Stop crunching it down and making blocks out of it, Max. We need to move on and hear the plot.
I don't get it. But yes, the plot. Oh, boy. In the year 2525, assuming man is still alive. No. Actually, according to background info, it's the year 2805. Earth has become so polluted and garbage clogged, not to mention shrouded by a massive cloud of satellites, that humanity has given up, boarded a bunch of Vegas hotel spaceships, and decided to just hang out in interplanetary space while an army of robots clean up the planet for them. This was supposed to take 5 years. Almost 800 years later, there's exactly one robot left, and the job is nowhere near finished. Wally is an adorable little Johnny Five unit or something, whose job it is to act as a combination track compactor building bot. He tries his best, but it's kind of a lot for one remaining robot. Somewhere along the line, for reasons, Wally's become self-aware. Or maybe he always was. We don't really know. He spends his days collecting interesting bits of garbage, playing with his pet cockroach, because of course they survived, and watching an incredibly durable videotape of Hello, Dolly. Suddenly, his 800 years and the videotape still works. Sure. Suddenly, his world changes when a shiny new Apple Eve unit appears, looking for signs of vegetation. And what do you know? Wally has found the last plant on Earth, Kamandi. There's a deeper. Growing inside an old refrigerator.
You're fired.
An old refrigerator with no sunlight or rain. What kind of hell plant is this? But Eve doesn't care. She thinks it's great. And Wally thinks she's great. So everything's great, right? No! Eve is immediately evac to the Axiom, her Apple store. Mothership, where much of humanity lives. Wally, smitten, follows her into space to be with his stalker victim. His true love. Plant's existence is the key that will enable humanity to return to Earth, but Kokomo, it seems the ship's autopilot is operating under Secret Directive 66. A113. Which means the humans are supposed to just stay on the ship because it's less scary. Many action scenes happen. Robot fights robot. Robot fights autopilot. Human fights autopilot. Human fights deck chairs. Wally sacrifices himself so Eve may fulfill her directive. But then it turns out he's Robot Jesus and comes back. Everyone is back on Earth. Robots are happy. Humans are probably doomed. And everyone lives happily ever after.
The film.
So, Mike, Did you see this when it came out in 2008?
Not only did I see it when it came out, that is the last time I saw it. I only saw it
really?
Once.
Really? You saw it once? The oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Did you see it when it came out? Of course you did.
I did, of course. Yeah. I was a huge, huge Pixar fan.
Yeah. Used to be I would go and see every Pixar and Disney film that came out. Notice I said used to be.
Past tense. Yeah. But we have a cast to talk about.
Sort of.
Well, yeah, kind of. How weird is it that Fred Willard is one of the biggest names in this movie of human actors, alongside Sigourney Weaver?
She has one line. One thing about Ben Burtt, though, before we can go any further. So Ben Burtt, you mentioned Star Wars. The thing about Ben Burtt and Star Wars is that all of the sound effects for Star Wars were created by him.
Yep,
so the lightsabers, the stormtrooper blasters, pretty much everything.
Yeah, and it was just him holding a microphone going...
It was not.
Oh,
okay. But he made a library of sounds that they are still using today.
There's
new sounds, but they will still refer back to the originals. And he, back then, it was 1976 when they were making the film, and he would go out with his little tape recorder and his headphones and a microphone and record stuff. And that's how you made those sounds. Now, of course, they can digitize and, you know, create stuff. But he, all those sounds, everything that we associate with Star Wars was Ben Burtt. So I think one of the ways they got him to it was literally, it's like, hey, you get to talk in this one. Heck, you might even get top credit because, you know, you play the lead. So, and he does a very nice job with Wally. Mm-hmm. I think he makes Wally has to be relatable. Wally has to be human-like because there is nothing humanoid even really about him. He's got tank treads and he looks like he's about 3 feet tall. So I think he does a great, I mean, he did the same job with R2-D2. I mean, right? He made an actual series of sentences in beeps and boops, but we kind of know what R2-D2 is saying, although some of that stuff really should not have been said in front of kids, just saying.
So,
I think Ben Burtt does a great voice.
Yeah, he's terrific. And a great job. And considering how limited his vocabulary is in this movie, he gets an enormous amount across with very few words.
Yeah. Alyssa Knight, I mean, to be fair, I'm guessing she's just filtered and she, too, does a fine job.
She's adorable. I think her voice is so cute.
Yeah, and I guess you said she wasn't even an actor, so there you go. So that worked out well.
Yeah.
Jeff Garlin is an actor. He plays the captain.
Yeah.
I recognize his voice, and I'm looking at his face going, I know I've seen him probably in many things, but I can't place him in
the
moment.
He's been in hundreds. He's been in so many friggin' things. He's one of those, that guy actors.
Yeah, and then... Yep. Out of nowhere, like an archangel, we have Fred Willard.
Fred Willard. I got to say, he's a really good choice to be like by and large's mouthpiece CEO, because he's so, you know, both sleazy and yet likable.
Yeah. I want to come back to him in particular, but other parts of this film that involve that. Mm-hmm. Sure enough, there's a character named John, and who plays John?
John Ratzenberger. John Ratzenberger. The eternal John Ratzenberger, who is in every single Pixar movie.
Yeah, he is the Alan Tudyk of Pixar, I guess. Well, because Alan Tudyk became the John Ratzenberger of Disney.
Okay.
And yeah, he's in all their movies.
We also have, as his love interest, Mary. I really wanted her name to be Marcia. You know, John, Marcia. But it was Mary. And that's Kathy Najimy, who is adorable.
She is adorable. And her voice is adorable, and it's kind of perfect. I actually did recognize Sigourney Weaver, even though she has like three lines.
Three lines. And most of them are only one or two words.
Is that Sigourney Weaver?
Yeah.
I think they must have gotten her just because it's like, oh, we're so geeked out. We should get Sigourney Weaver in our science fiction animated film. Oh, boy, oh, boy, oh, boy. And why not?
Probably.
So, and then we have some people that are apparently in there, and they're fine.
Most of them half a line.
Blonde boy. Yeah, you know, they're just... So, yeah, we have a Pixar film, and one of my earliest notes is, remember when Pixar films were challenging?
When before they decided feelings were scary.
Well, it wasn't so much that. It's just that they used to take chances. And this film has no people in it for the first however chunk of time. So, and we have had animal characters before. You know, that's fine. But there's very little talking. Like, Wally's... Yeah. Not really talking. He's mostly watching cuts of Hello, Dolly, which I did not know what it was. Because they don't show Hello, Dolly, you know.
It's so odd that they invoke Hello, Dolly, and they're using songs like Only a Moment and Put on Your Sunday Best. But they're not using the iconic ones like If You Ain't Got Elegance or, you know, Hello, Dolly.
Yeah. So I didn't know what musical it was. So, but this does bring me back to the thing I wanted to talk to you about with Fred Willard, because we have a really odd dichotomy here. Mm-hmm. We have got a very, in its way, realistic, exceedingly detailed animated film, and then we have real people.
Yeah, yeah, it's jarring.
It is jarring. How did you feel about that? Especially because
we
see the video first.
I didn't like it. Especially because we then see the other humans are also animated.
Right.
So why? I don't get.
Like they were fixated, I guess, on that musical and having those songs and having Wally being interested. Does that mean that Wally's gay? No. But, you know, they had it seem to have that in their heads. Like, we want to do this. We want to have this musical mean something. Didn't occur to me while I'm watching the film why, I don't know. But I am totally on your side with a videotape lasting that long. All you have to do is just leave them there. If you don't play a videotape and it sits in its box for 10 years, when you go to put it in, it will not work properly.
Yeah.
It will.
Eventually, the magnetic field on the particles fades. It just does. They're good for maybe 10, 15 years.
Oh, sometimes that's even pushing it. If you've watched it at all.
Yeah. If you've done anything with them. No, there's no way. Most of the technology... Do you notice he uses a car beeper, a fob, that apparently the car battery is still working?
Well, never mind the idea that car batteries are still working. Because at one point, he's solar-powered, which makes sense. But nothing else is. Why wouldn't the rest of his little trailer be solar-powered? I don't understand. And to be fair, we're sitting here nitpicking the science of a Pixar film. Because there is plenty of science to nitpick. But, okay. Like, there is no sound in space. No.
There's no sound. And also, you notice at one point, the plant is exposed to hard vacuum.
Yeah, doesn't even get
cold. And it's fine.
It doesn't get frozen, nothing.
Nope. So it's just like...
Yeah. Two things to remember.
What kind of hell plant is this, I say again?
There are two things to remember. There is no sound in space, and there is no crying in baseball. So...
After that, I was like, I'm waiting for the plant to go feed me.
I know, Audrey 3, right? So, Pixar movies used to be challenging. What do I mean by that? They used to do things with making you as an audience, especially knowing there were kids there, face things that they might not generally expect in films. Like, we're going to watch this movie about these two nice old people. Oh, in the first 10 minutes, one of them dies and it's real, real sad. No. Real, real sad. Because that used to be the thing, right?
You're not supposed to make me cry in the first 10 minutes.
No, usually they wait till the end.
Yes!
But that was the thing with Pixar films, right? Pixar films are going to make you cry. That's just how it works.
Yeah, that to me was the mark of the great ones.
Yeah.
That they made you cry.
And because you cared. You cared. Mm. Wally is a 3-foot cube with treads and a binocular eye thing. That's it. But they managed to get that much emotion into this character, and he's a good character, right? I mean, you know, capital G good, like, you know, not neutral evil or anything like that. So, you know, and we're watching this film, which quite honestly, it starts off with no humans. That's one thing. But close to halfway through the film, basically points the projector right at the audience and says, hey, is this you? Are you the kind of person who doesn't get out of their chair and is sitting there looking at your screen all the time? Is this you? The irony.
And keep in mind, this was.
Yeah. The irony, though, is that this film was made by people who sat on their chairs all day in front of a screen to make this film. And
keep in mind, this was 2008. Yeah. The smartphone craze had not taken off.
No, but the computer stuff had. Internet
they
had.
Just start. The computer had. Cell phones were around. But the obsession with screens tablets or that really struck me this time watching, because they're all, you know, the humans are all in these hover chairs, so they don't even have to get out of bed under their own power. They don't have to stand up.
No.
And they have this screen projected in front of them, and that's all they see. And one of the sort of running gags is John and Mary, their screens get shut off, and they suddenly go, look around, we have a pool?
Yeah.
Or looks outside, go, oh, wow, it's gorgeous out there. What the heck is that? Nobody looks at anything.
Yeah, too bad that,
it's like, that
kind of came true.
Yeah, this film is uncomfortably prescient in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, it doesn't talk about global warming, but it might as well have, really.
It's very much about man-made catastrophe, sure, because the world has been destroyed by garbage and pollution, you can tell. And the whole thing of this being surrounded by this shell of satellites, that's actually happening.
Yeah, there's a lot
of
junk up
there. It is actually really tricky now to shoot anything into space because there's all this crap floating around that we put there.
What amazes me is that it's somehow staying up there. Like, they must have calculated exactly where it needs to be so that even when the engines turn off, it runs out of fuel or power, it can just stay right where it is. It's not going to come crashing
down. You put it in a stable orbit.
Which, to be fair, is probably a good idea because...
It is. That's why they did it, I believe.
Remember Skylab Day? Yeah, so, I do. We made a big target in the field of the day camp I worked at, and kids had little helmets with targets on them, too. Although, you know, nobody actually got hurt with that one. But stuff keeps crashing down and somebody's going to get hurt. So we have two major main characters. We have Wally and we have Eva, which is what he calls her. I know her name's Eve, but it's pronounced Eva by Wally. So I'm going with Eva. Mm-hmm. So what exactly is her mission? And I'm asking this seriously.
Her mission is to check out Earth and it sounds like other possible planets to find viable vegetation.
Well, I don't know about other planets because the only one she goes to is Earth, but... Yeah. You forgot the second part of her mission. Shoot anything that moves! Like, what the hell?
Yeah, apparently she's equipped with a photon torpedo launcher.
Why?
Because she doesn't know what she's going to encounter down there.
What could she encounter? They're not expecting her to find anything.
You've seen science fiction. There could be gorillas with portholes on their heads. There could be there could be giant cucumbers.
Well, let's...
crab people.
Let's bring this up, because why not? Do you think that there are any of Asimov's rules of robotics that are actually working here? Because I don't.
Nope. No. Both of them are pretty careless about life and property.
Yeah, she shows up
and obviously, because Wally, for example, has no self-preservation or
well, that's not
he's
true.
Willing to, at the end, he sacrifices himself.
That's different.
And that's
though.
Overriding the.
Because he does have self-preservation. Yeah, that's when true. The windstorms show up, he's like, oh, I better shut my door. Otherwise.
Yeah, I also wonder, why did they program him to feel fear?
Well, all right. So one of my notes is, giving machines human characteristics isn't doing them any favors.
No, or us for that matter. We really, it's like when you create gods in mythologies. Some reason we always have to give them all of our flaws.
Yeah. Well, and actually, one of my favorite depictions of that was an otherwise lousy film called Yellowbeard. And what happens is he ends up getting to the Norse pantheon, the actual gods.
Oh, no, you're thinking of Eric the Viking.
Oh, no, you're right, Eric the Viking. And he finally gets to Valhalla, and all the gods are children, like just little kids. Yep. And it's like, oh, dear gods, that makes so much sense.
It makes perfect sense. Yeah,
it also wasn't a very good film. But, yeah, I don't think humanizing, especially if you're just giving it to a garbage robot. Like, literally, that's all it is a garbage man, right? Why are we giving them emotions? Mm-hmm. Well, because if we don't have any picture. Yeah, I get it.
Yeah.
But
I figured part of it, either that's what happened or that's what 700 plus years of being alone did to him. He developed consciousness.
Sure.
It's not really the point. It does. I mean, the science in this is questionable at best.
Yeah.
We'll get to other parts. But what did you think of the music?
Besides the...
Not just the Hello Dolly stuff?
I didn't know what the musical was, but other than the Hello Dolly stuff, I honestly didn't notice it.
I like the fact that when he is taking her on, trying to, you know, court her, he's trying to court Eve on Earth, they're playing La Vie en Rose.
Okay.
But they're not doing the classic Edith Piaf one, which is the one that, you know, it makes you feel like you want to go out and conquer Germany for them.
Okay.
But... they're doing Louis Armstrong's very tender version.
Oh, that song. Yes. Unfortunately, they picked that song. And when they started it, all I could hear was lumph, da da dee da dee dumph, la da dee da dee dumph, la da dee da dee dumph, lumph.
Another thing to blame on Warner Brothers. Okay.
Yeah, I heard the Daffy Duck version.
I was sitting there going, why would they use that version? I did come up with a possible answer. It's a tie back to Hello Dolly. Louis Armstrong is in Hello Dolly.
Of course
Dolly.
He is. He sings the song.
He's playing a band leader called Louis.
Yeah, which, you know, I mean, but heck, you don't need an excuse to have Louis Armstrong. Any, just bring him in. Yeah. I don't care. I don't care if it's a Jackie Chan film. Bring in Louis Armstrong.
Oh, man, I would love to see Louis Armstrong in a Jackie Chan movie.
The sad thing is you could. He could just be in a nightclub somewhere, and Jackie's having a fight, and Louis is just being Louis.
Jackie, what you doing?
Louis, he just always brought an extra bit of class whenever he showed up.
Yep.
So
hit it with my trumpet.
So, yeah, the human characteristics thing. So they apparently experience love, or at least Wally does, and then he teaches it to Eva, which now what? Are they going to have baby robots?
They're going to build robot babies.
I don't know.
They don't need to. They're robots. They're effectively immortal. Why would they need to reproduce?
Because it's fun.
No, they just want to go dance. One of my favorite scenes in this is when they are out in space and Wally has, in defiance of the laws of physics, figured out that he can use a fire extinguisher as a jet engine.
You're not saying that as soon as he went out into the vacuum, it would have exploded, are you?
Or as soon as he triggered it, it would have seized up instantly and then exploded.
Yeah. Never mind that it lasts a long time.
Those chemicals go inert in like 5 years.
The dial was still, it had a little tag on it. It was fine. To be fair, it was on the ship.
In effect, yeah. That's true. That could have, they would have, you know, the robots would have recharged it. But he finds one on Earth that still works, which I referred to as Chekhov's fire extinguisher, because we see him use it and it comes back into the plot.
Yeah, sure.
But they go out flying together because one of the first things you see about Eve, and I thought this was a really nice touch, when she first enters, she can fly, and she's doing it because for the first moment, she's not scanning, she's just enjoying it. She's enjoying the feeling of flying.
Yeah.
And then she and Wally are flying together, while at the same time, you know, Captain Blobbo is finding out about...
the plot.
Dancing.
Oh.
The plot.
Dancing, yeah. I was like, oh... Wait,
and that's what they're doing. So they're dancing, and it's
good. You gorgeous. Stand up. Oh, huh. Never occurred to me. Weird.
Yeah.
Speaking of the captain, so the captain doesn't do anything. Nobody does anything. Their big moment that we see them enjoy is when they change the color of their jumpsuits from red to blue. Woo! And you
blue. It's the new red.
You get the impression that they've done this umpteen times, and that's like almost a holiday. So we have the captain, and he has got a set of duties, most of which is going around the room to make sure all the little gauges are fine, and then he makes announcements about how nothing's going to happen today. Isn't that wonderful? When this plot in the form of a little plant shows up, and he finds out that there actually is a goal, or was a goal, of them going back to Earth, he suddenly becomes very, very interested in this, to the point where he's like, yes, I'm willing to stand up if that means that we go back to Earth, this place that should be amazing. And once they finally get there, and various conflicts, so on and so forth, robot rebellion, because there's a robot rebellion, they open the doors. And I don't know about you, but I did not believe it when the captain was like, well, I guess we're going to have to work to make it better. My thought was, everyone back into the ship. We're heading into space.
Oh, my thought about that is, well, they're all going to die.
Yeah.
These guys don't. First off, there's no way they could have stood up. I'm sorry. If they spent their entire lives in those chairs, it's not their muscles wouldn't have atrophied. They wouldn't have developed in the first place. And they are so not equipped.
No.
The only thing in their favor is they still have an intact ship and an army of robots to help them.
Yeah.
They will be so miserable. It's like there's no electricity. There's no plumbing. They're all going to have to go back into the ship to poop. Is that it?
Oh.
Or back in their chairs? Let's face it. The chairs are probably toilets.
Nobody poops in Pixar. We all know that.
Yeah, true.
No, seriously. Is it going to matter where they poop? Look around them.
Yeah, I wanted to notice.
No, and it's...
And the implication is, for some reason, we see plants everywhere, and then in the end credits, we see admittedly very cool animations of them rebuilding civilization, which I'm sitting there going, no way, I call no way, no way, yeah. No, no.
Yeah.
I thought it was just good if they were realistic. It's like, oh, look, now the world is populated with robots.
Or a combination human-robot hybrid.
Yeah,
right?
Maybe cyborgs. Yeah, yeah.
I will say...
That's where the cars came from, God. In cars.
You know, somebody actually did a cutaway showing the internal organs and things of the car.
I know, it's horrifying.
It's awful.
it's like David Cronenberg level stuff.
I don't know about you, but there is one point in the film that hit me really, really hard. And it was so easy for them to overcome this, but they just it didn't occur to them. At one point, they close the Lido deck, and I said, call for Gopher and Isaac. They'll get you out of this.
Yep.
Because you know that was a nod to the Pacific Princess.
Of course it was. I mean, the thing was supposed to be a princess cruise ship. Yeah. You can tell. Yeah,
it was very princessy shaped.
Yeah.
But we are getting to that point. What last notes do you have before we get to the point?
We do know exactly how long they've been in space.
700 and something.
2,555,642 days, which does line up to about 700 years. Yeah. And the captain says it's their 700th anniversary, so, you know, get your cupcake in a cup.
Yeah.
Ugh. I thought that was an interesting touch. And 700 years, yeah, that would be more than enough time for people to end up like that.
Well, he was talking about evolution in the original design. It's like, there's not a lot of evolution in 700 years.
No, but that's not evolution. That's environmental stuff. They're still human. They still have the same number of limbs and digits. It's just...
They're harder to
see. They don't use any of it, so it's atrophied. Yes. I'm also wondering, how did they reproduce?
Well, and see, that's why I'm thinking it's probably artificial.
We know they have babies.
I think it's artificial insemination. I think they're grown.
It's got to be. They can't have sex. They can barely stand up.
Vat puppies. That's what they are. That's the old cyberpunk term, vat puppy. Vat puppies aren't much fun. But you know what is fun? That's the end of the show where we decide, does this film hold up and stuff? So let's get to...
The finish.
So Max...
Huh?
WALL-E, one of the bigger, more successful Pixar films. We both saw it when it came out. Have you seen it since?
I've seen it once or twice, but not in the last, like, 10 years.
Okay. I'm sure you probably remembered it fairly well.
Yeah.
So what do you think of WALL-E? Does it stand up, and would you recommend it still?
I friggin' love this movie. This is one of my favorite Pixar movies. Hmm. I think it's awesome. I think it's beautifully animated. It is a pan to... visual storytelling. I think the characters are relatable and likable despite the fact they barely resemble humans at all, and I mean the robots. Yeah. I think WALL-E and Eve's relationship is incredibly sweet. I like the fact that the captain has clearly had this sort of suppressed desire to do something. I mean, he gets so upset when he finds out he missed giving morning announcements. He says, "It's the only thing I get to do." And then when he finds out there's more, it awakens something in him, and I believe it. I still don't believe he could have stood up. I don't believe any of them could have stood up. They just couldn't.
No.
I really like this movie. I think it's funny. I think the pacing work is beautiful. I really like it. What about you?
Well,
does it hold up?
My feelings about the film aren't really related to the film, which is weird. It's related to the world today. Because at the time, it felt very far-flung future-y, and no, this would never happen-y, and I can't believe we'd ever act like this-y. And now that we are, I don't find the motivation of the human characters believable, shall we say. Yeah. Yes, there's a lot of problems with these signs. I also have to ask questions like, why did, by and large, send the ship so far away? Because they're literally in another galaxy. We know this because they're viewing the Milky Way at one point. It's like, you don't have to go. You could have just gone to Mars or Saturn. You'd have been fine. But okay, whatever. That's all right.
There's a ton of interplanetary space to drift around in.
But it doesn't matter.
My other question is, what happened to the other ships? Where are the other ships?
Are there other ships?
This is a fleet. Yes, we see a whole bunch taking off at one point during the billboard sequence.
You know, whatever. We have an issue with the main computer running the ship, which is called Otto, which makes sense. But interestingly, it's the exact same problem that Hal suffers. And here's the thing. I actually didn't. They don't explain this in 2001. They do in 2010, which is a far lesser film. Yeah. It's actually in the original book. In the original 2001, the bit about Hal, like, okay, you told me to do two contradictory things.
So I'm going to go insane.
Well, basically, it wasn't even that.
Otto isn't evil.
No.
He isn't evil. He's doing what he's supposed to do. It's his program.
But the way it's portrayed is he's got a red eye. He's supposed to be evil. Evil, bad robot thing. Yeah. And here's the thing I have to say, because I don't have as much faith in humanity as this film does, my kind of feeling is they're going to get back on the ship. I don't buy it. I just don't buy the ending. I wish I could, but I don't. And it's not the film is very well made. It is gorgeous to look at. The detail level is off the scales. Like, even for a Pixar film, like, they kept upping themselves. It's hard to, if you look at the original Toy Story, never mind the original short tin toy. It's not even night and day. I don't know what it is.
It's incredible. They did so much in a fairly short time.
But the storytelling was, at that time, was always the most important part. They gave us a film that had a villain that had a full arc and actually turns themselves around. And that was Ratatouille, of all things. In the end of that film, the villain understands the errors of his ways and changes, which you never see.
Yep.
And Pixar doesn't do that anymore. And so...
No, they play it way too safe. They don't have any villains. I mean, Otto is a villain, even if his motivation is understandable. Yeah. I mean, he's a slave to his programming. Right. Although find out
he's a slave to Fred Willard.
Yes, well, how's that for embarrassing?
Yeah. So
I think this movie challenges you very much.
Does.
Much so, like the way the classics did. You come up with very complicated things, the dangers of just ignoring problems or trying to run away from them, the power of Lerv, but it works.
Oh, I'm willing to bet that it challenged its very audience. I'm betting that it pointed fingers at people in the audience that was watching this and said, is this you? Mm-hmm. Is that you? Mm-hmm. No. So, yeah, it took risks, especially for ostensibly a kid's film. Although this is when Pixar made films like this, it wasn't to me that they were for kids. It's that the storytelling was both universal and simple enough that it could be enjoyed by anybody. So the points they're making are just as important as, like, I don't know, a Werner Herzog film. I don't know. But they're done in a way that they can be digested by anyone. And some people might say that that makes them watered down or less interesting. But back then, I don't think that's true. It just reached a bigger audience. So I think the film's very well made. It's just today's world environment makes
it. You can't separate
it. Because it's like, we'd stay on the boat. We'd stay on the ship. We would stay on the ship. That's what we would do. And also, I just miss this kind of Pixar film. It's a shame that they don't make them this challenging anymore.
Well, I'm sorry you can't enjoy it the same way. I loved watching it again. I'm so glad we did.
Well, good. And you know what else you should do again and again is answer our poll question. Now, that was
indeed.
Less bumpy than usual. Oh, sorry, bumpy.
No. Don't say bumpy. Ah! If you say it three times, he appears.
He's right over there.
Yes, our new poll question. Oh, yeah. See? We want to know, who is your favorite Pixar or Disney Pixar protagonist? The lead of the film, you know, Wally, Mr. Incredible, Sid, I don't know, anyone you like. And you can tell us this in so many myriad ways. You can use your computer box thing to email us at us@maxmikemovies.com. You can go to our website, maxmikemovies.com, using your computer box again and leave us a high-tech comment.
You've done that before.
You can, of course, go to us on the social medias.
Blueski and Facebook.
There. Are you happy?
Yes.
Good. Good. Glad to hear it. Don't care.
Too long, didn't care.
You can also, you can also, of course, find us on the podcast app of your choice. And you can, of course, like the delectable Ms. Hempelmeyer.
He's searching for the number.
Call us. I am looking for the number.
617-398-7266. That number again, Max, is...
What was that?
617-398-7266.
I knew that. It was just a test. But we are barely halfway through our Cause It's Good For You series.
Yeah.
Mike, what are we watching next week? Huh?
I want to watch a movie about people. We did machines this week, and yes, there's humans in them, but...
People? We ain't people.
I want to watch a movie about people, and I want to watch a movie about my favorite kind of people. And this is a Criterion Collection film.
People who need people?
You know, they're the luckiest people in the world. Sure. Yeah. No, I have a certain favorite kind of people, and this is a film I've never seen before. And I'm glad that they have finally, and I think you will agree that these are also your favorite kind of people. They are, in fact, cat people.
Cats.
No, it's not cat. There's no singing in this film.
We're watching cats again.
There are no digitized buttholes. None of that stuff.
Release the butthole cut.
And to be fair, this is not the more recent version. This is the 1942 version. It's a film called Cat People. And I've heard that it is more interesting than it has a right to be, or whatever you want to say. And it is...
Wow. So this is not the one with David Bowie.
It is not...
Sorry, Roddy McDowall.
This is not. This is from 1942. Mm. It's a black and white film. Sorry, folks, but you're going to have to deal with that again. And it has got cat people in it. That's all I... That's literally all I know. Cat people. So next week, if you would, won't you, cat people...
This has been a co-production of The Voice of Max and The Movie Wrench.